I'm Tom Hall. This is the Midday News Wrap. Last Monday night, Charmaine Wilson, a mother of 8 children, was shot to death moments after speaking to police in East Baltimore. 2 days later, on a baseball field in Alexandria, Virginia, Republican Congressman Steve Scalise and 3 others were shot, including a Capitol Hill police officer who lives in Baltimore County. Last night, congressional leaders vowed to tamp down their vitriolic rhetoric. City leaders have vowed to address Baltimore's epidemic of violence. But in a week that included the anniversary of the worst mass killing in U.S. history, there seems to be no end in sight to violence on our streets and even in our political discourse. Today on the News Wrap, we'll talk about some of the stories that made headlines this week with Aisha Rasko of Reuters and Alan Walden, a former Republican candidate for mayor. Plus, the Peabody Consort performs Music of 3 Faiths live in Studio A. The Midday News Wrap is coming right up.
We are united in our shock. We are united in our anguish. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us.
To my colleagues, you're going to hear me say something you've never heard me say before. I identify myself with the remarks of the speaker.
Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms.
The whole Trump campaign, and the people worked on the campaign and have been in the administration, seem to have collective amnesia when it comes to meeting Russians. They are not acting, as I've said, like people who have nothing to hide.
I am not Stonewall. I am following the historic policies of the Department of Justice.
The Donald and I, we are winning and winning in the polls.
A little gentle ribbing there from what was supposed to be an off-the-record gathering with the Australian Prime Minister this week. Congress was on the record and on the field last night in Washington celebrating America's pastime and talking unity. The Democrats won the game 11-2, and in a vote of 98-2 on Thursday, yesterday, the Senate voted to expand sanctions against Russia and Iran. Majority Whip Steve Scalise remains in critical condition. A student released from a North Korean prison returns home with brain damage, and some streets in Baltimore remain among the most dangerous in the nation. The New York Times is reporting that late last night, the Department of Homeland Security announced it will continue the Obama-era DACA program, wherein children known as Dreamers who entered the country illegally with their parents will not be deported, and they will be allowed to get work permits. This reverses a campaign pledge made by candidate Donald Trump. The administration is today announcing new rules for travel to Cuba. 4,000 troops will soon be traveling to Afghanistan, and the president continues to characterize the Mueller investigation as a witch hunt. And in other news, Amazon is buying Whole Foods. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to the Midday News Wrap. We won't get to every story that made headlines this week, but we will take a swing at as many as we can. Aisha Rasko is a White House correspondent for Reuters. She joins us on the line from the NPR studios in Washington. Welcome, Aisha. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Alan Walden is a longtime broadcaster on WBAL radio and a former Republican candidate for mayor of Baltimore. He joins me here in Studio A. Alan, it's nice to see you.
Good to be here.
And you are really quite nice to take time out from a very difficult day today. Your wife, Jeannie, is undergoing surgery today at GBMC, and so she is in our prayers and in our thoughts. And
thank you, Tom. I appreciate that.
You're very nice to come and join us. You are welcome to join us as well. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, that would be great, at Midday Tom Hall. Aisha Rasko, the shooting in Alexandria has shaken up the entire city of Washington, not just the members of Congress, but I think members of the media, members of the administration. I mean, what's your take on the mood of D.C. On Capitol Hill and elsewhere following this really horrendous event?
Well, I think it's total shock. I think people don't wake up and expect to hear that lawmakers are the victims of a shooting, and to do it in such a kind of brutal way. I think that it really shook people. to have that happen. I think that lawmakers are, you know, are rightly saying or are saying at this point that they want to bring the rhetoric down and that they want unity. Now, of course, you know, business goes on. So they're still kind of having the same fights over health care and things like that. Those things don't really stop. But I think last night with the baseball game, you saw kind of this coming together. You know, you saw Nancy Pelosi and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer all out there together. And you rarely see those pictures of them kind of together and smiling. So I think that at least is meaningful. Of course, you know, with Congressman Scalise still in the hospital, still, I think at last check, still in critical condition. I mean, it's all very concerning. It's a very serious situation.
And Alan Walden, the vitriol that has permeated the political discourse in the country, many people date it from the candidacy of Donald Trump, which began actually 2 years ago today when he cruised down the escalator at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue. But it is certainly both sides of the aisle that have had their moments of demeaning rhetoric, vitriolic rhetoric. To what extent do you think Congress itself has responsibility for contributing to an environment or a sort of tone in discourse that allows people to this shooter in Virginia, you know, allegedly was doing it as some sort of political act?
Well, Congress's responsibility is to do what it does. Now, that includes a certain degree of vitriol. There is an antagonism between the two parties, and it's not of current vintage. It goes back to the founding of the Republic. There has never been an uglier election campaign, probably, since the election campaign between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, which was nasty beyond belief. So politicians get nasty toward one another. There was the caning incident before the Civil War that occurred right in the halls of Congress. People who represent the American public should behave in a more civilized manner. We should expect them to behave in a more civilized manner.
The bar is raised for them.
The bar is raised, but we should also understand their people with very strongly held opinions, and their job is not only to represent the people who elected them, but to use their judgment if they think something is right or something is wrong or something is good or something is bad. The problem here, I don't think, originates the vitriol that you mentioned, does not originate with the members of Congress themselves. Whether or not they support Donald Trump, whether or not they voted for Donald Trump, they don't like him. A lot of people in Congress don't like him. Hell, I don't like him. But he's the man with a job. And he has to do his job as well as he can do it, and they have to do their job as well. But I don't think that's the problem. The problem is the way this divide in America is being treated, primarily on social media. And I'm not going to use the MSM mainstream media. It's all mainstream media. You can't divide it that easily. Rush Limbaugh is mainstream media with the people who regard him as mainstream, the people who support him. But on social media, the discourse has been dumbed down to a level I have not experienced in my 80-plus years on this planet, not even during Vietnam, not even during Watergate, nothing like this. The meanness, the cocktail we have allowed ourselves to create, this cocktail of hatred, pure, unvarnished hatred.
Yeah, and it's a hatred that's allowed to be unleashed, Aisha Roscoe, because people are speaking to people anonymously a lot of times. And, of course, Alicia, and by the way, it's Roscoe, forgive me, I just mispronounced your name. The Trump administration, you know, a lot of people do point to the fact that there are some serious credibility issues. I think the Post this morning or yesterday has enumerated more than 600 instances of the president saying things that are factually not true. You just wrote a story yesterday about the fact that at this juncture, there is no plan for raising the debt ceiling. So work does continue, but it sounds like even the most basic work is not really getting done, is it?
Well, I think the problem that the Trump administration is finding is that it's very hard for them to get on kind of one accord when it comes to policies, and especially when they're competing views. And the president doesn't seem to he seems to kind of like debate, to kind of drag on, and he kind of likes to have suspense build, so which is fine and good maybe for television. I think when it comes to governing, that can raise some issues, because here we are getting closer and closer to the federal government meeting its limit for the debt ceiling. And they can't really agree on how they want that to be done. And so I think that those issues come to a head. And they also just have so many distractions, with story after story coming out about Russia and about these obstruction of justice investigations. It's distracting. And the president continually tweets about the issues. So even as they try to focus, this week was supposed to be focused on workforce development. But you have the president this morning, he's not tweeting about apprenticeships. He's not tweeting about what they did yesterday to try to
He's tweeting about his own Justice Department.
Yes, he's tweeting about the Justice Department. So he steps on their own message, really. Yeah.
And Alan Waldron, when you talk about social media, I mean, the president is
It's not only social media. For Donald Trump, the presidency of the United States is, in large measure, a reality show. In many ways, he treats it as a reality show. Now, I'm not going to say this is a
His reality is pretty confused right now.
It is.
I don't mean his own personal mental reality. I'm talking about just the chaotic nature of the administration, which people pointed to the week of the inauguration. They have not stopped pointing to that as an overarching characteristic of this administration.
I understand that. But we're dealing with agendas here at cross purposes. They're angry agendas, and we keep looking for ways to, what's the sub-agenda under this agenda? Is it a witch hunt against Donald Trump? The Russia business, I don't think, has legs. I don't think there's any traction there. So what do we do? Okay, we'll switch to something else. We'll go after him for obstruction of justice. We automatically, because there's a natural adversarial relationship between the media, between the press, and government, we automatically say, that's got to be wrong, so we have to look for what is right. The problem is, that's not the way I view journalism. I'm one of those people who says we look for facts and let someone else determine what's true.
Well, but I don't think
anybody don't look for truth.
I don't think anybody at the moment is purporting that the facts about the Russia involvement, potential Russia involvement with members of the Trump campaign, are known. I mean, that's what an investigation is all about.
Yeah.
I mean, and whether or not there's collusion, whether or not there's obstruction of justice, that's all in a very nascent stage, isn't
it? But is it actually logical, right, beneficial to the country to literally create a matrix in which the one idea, the sole idea, is to remove this president?
Well, the matrix, I think, you know, most people, and Aisha Rasko, I mean, you cover the Hill. The matrix here is whether or not Bob Mueller is going to be able to take a look at this range of issues having to do with collusion, the possibility of that, having to do with the possibility of obstruction of justice, and having to do, frankly, with the financial dealings of people like Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner. But that investigation is at the very early stages. The Department of Justice last night issued Rod Rosenstein, who people here in Maryland know quite well because he was the U.S. attorney here for a number of years, said Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch or agency of government. Aisha, this is the most unusual press release I think I've ever gotten from the Department of Justice.
What the heck does it mean?
What do you make of it?
It's bizarre. And it's never good when you put out a statement and it raises more questions than it answers. So when he put out this statement, or this statement has been put out, and so no one really knows what story it's referring to. Is it a story that's about to come out? Was it a story? There were stories yesterday about Jared Kushner being under investigation. Was it that? So when you have, and then some people are, and this is complete speculation. Was this, was Rosenstein feeling pressure from maybe Sessions or from the White House and to kind of exonerate President Trump, or to exonerate someone associated with the White House, and this is what Rosenstein put out. When you put out a message like this, and then it kind of spurs like theories and people start theorizing, that's not what it's supposed to do. The message is supposed to kind of clarify things. This did not do that.
Yeah.
So it's not clear what he's talking about, but it just raises more questions.
Aisha Rasko is a White House correspondent for Reuters. Alan Walden ran for mayor last year as a Republican here in Baltimore. We'll have more of the midday news wrap. This is the Bloomsday edition, by the way. Today is Bloomsday for all you James Joyce fans. We are going to come back after a short break. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to join our conversation, our email midday@wypr.org, to follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on Monday on Midday, a look at the new transit system in Baltimore. Baltimore Link makes its debut on Sunday, and we'll explore how it will work. The MTA is promising that the new system will be a big improvement from the current version. They say it will better coordinate connections between bus and rail routes and make it easier to get to job centers around the city. I'll talk with MTA Director Kevin Quinn, plus Brian O'Malley from the Central Maryland Transit Alliance, City Planner Klaus Philipson, and Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. They'll join me to tell us whether or not they think that Baltimore Link will indeed accomplish those goals. We hope you can join us Monday here on Midday. And coming up a little later today on our program, the Peabody Consort will play live right here in Studio A. We'll get a sneak preview of their Music of Three Faiths concert that they'll be giving Sunday night. But first, we continue the Midday News Wrap. Former Republican candidate for mayor and radio personality Alan Walden joins me here in the studio and online from NPR Studios in Washington, Reuters White House reporter Aisha Rasko. You can join us as well, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So, Aisha, you wrote another piece a couple days ago for Reuters about the health care bill, and a really shocking comment that was evidently made by the president in a lunch with Republican senators to talk about the health care bill, in which he pronounced the one that he supported the last time around, that Congress did pass earlier in the session, as mean. So he's characterizing Paul Ryan's big victory in Congress on the repeal and replace of Obamacare as mean. What has that done to the climate around health care? And they are running out of time to get a bill done before recess, aren't they?
Well, I mean, it makes it all the more difficult because I think some lawmakers are now concerned that if they do take this tough vote, that the president may not continue to back them if it turns out the policy isn't popular. It's hard to, I mean, you can't forget. President Trump held a celebration in the Rose Garden with the House Republicans who passed that bill that he's now saying is mean. He said in that lunch, he was meeting with Senate Republicans, he said in that lunch that he wanted health care to be kind, with heart, generous. And those aren't words that are really associated with the House health care bill, if you believe polling. And so it seems like he's trying to say, and he said also that they may need to put more funding in. He doesn't really specify what he means by more funding, but he seems to be saying you may need to throw some more money at this issue in the Senate. But it's unclear how that how what he's saying is going to equate to something that can actually be put into law, because you have very conservative Republicans who feel like the House bill went too far and still had entitlements in it. And then you have a Senate bill that's probably going to keep the pre-existing conditions. It's probably still going, it's going to be likely more generous. And so how do you reconcile those two things between the two chambers? It's going to be a very difficult road, but it seems like the Republicans are trying to get something done because this is something they promised.
And Aisha, what do you think the chances of Senator McConnell getting a bill done before the recess?
I mean, Senator McConnell, I mean, he's an expert at this. He's you know, I mean, he's known for being a very shrewd operator. So I wouldn't necessarily bet against him. The Republicans do seem to be, even though they're keeping everything very close to their vest, they do seem to be moving ahead, even and some moderate Republicans are complaining about the process, but no one's saying that they're gonna, you know, that they're gonna not go along with it, or that they won't be able, or some people are saying they may not get to 50, but there seems to be enough support that it could possibly move forward. And so the question is, if they can't show the bill now because they're concerned about that it'll look bad, eventually it's going to come into the light. And so if it's not popular, that's the question that I have. Maybe they can get something out of the Senate, but then how do you reconcile that between the chambers? If you have two unpopular bills, I don't know how that happens. Are they really going to be in a rush to get that into law?
Yeah, the last one had like something like 17% approval rating. And so, Alan Walden, this is a really, it's a fascinating political moment. I mean, we have earlier this week the Washington Post reporting that Mr. Mueller is in fact investigating the president for the possibility of obstruction of justice.
Yes.
You've got the president then tweeting, I'm sure much to the chagrin of his legal advisors, and in so doing confirming that that's in fact going on, that he has been notified that he's the subject of an investigation. And then you've got the specter of Congress, the Senate rather, voting 98-2. This is an overwhelming vote to impose stronger sanctions against Russia and Iran, and to do what they can to tie the president's hands if those hands might be inclined to loosen the reins on Russia. What's going on here?
There's a relationship. There is undoubtedly a relationship between the United States and Russia. Is it criminal? No. I find that very hard to believe. Is it inappropriate? Maybe. But what we're talking about here is international politics and the relationships between two superpowers, or one superpower and one used-to-be superpower growing again. The sanctions that were passed 90, take a good look at the sanctions. They don't mean a whole lot, the sanctions being imposed upon the Russians. Oh, boy, they can't move back into their estate on Long Island. Pity.
Or one right here in Easton.
Yeah, I don't.
Although, I was in St. Petersburg a year ago last summer, and the folks in Russia will tell you that the sanctions are, I mean, they're mad at the United States about the sanctions. The sanctions are crippling that economy. I mean, it was very cheap for me and my family as Americans with American dollars to be in Russia. It is not cheap for Russians.
I understand that. I'm not saying that there aren't points of difficulty between them, but in the broad scheme of things, I don't think the relationship between the United States and Russia is the one that's going to send the world into a tailspin again. We have other problems besides that far more thorny, beginning with the President of the United States, who, please, please, stop tweeting. If he would only allow his brain to fully engage before he put his thumbs in gear, I think things would settle down a little more. But he is obsessive compulsive about it because this is the way he has chosen to communicate with the American people. And as you and I both know, a lot of the American people respond positively to that because we are social media junkies.
Now, and you are not the first member of the Republican Party to encourage the president to stop doing this. That's for sure.
I know that. I'm a constitutional conservative Republican. We've discussed this before. I believe in the Constitution, and I'm fairly conservative in my views. Not all of the time, but at least most of the time. The guy drives me nuts. Donald Trump drives me a little berserk through his behavior. But does he deserve to have heaped upon him the level of scorn that now exists?
Yeah. It's an open question. And Aisha, I wonder about the president alluded to his hundred million Twitter followers. And I think that's yet another gross, inflation of the actual numbers. But it is many millions of people. I wonder how that base, the people that he really does seem to enjoy talking to directly, so that he's not being reported on through people like you and the press corps of Washington and New York, etc. I wonder, for example, today's announcement, which was made very late last night, about DACA, the so-called Dreamers. He promised time and again that he was going to deport all of those kids who entered the country illegally with their parents. And now the Department of Homeland Security has said that they are, in fact, going to continue the Obama-era regulation when it comes to DACA. People will be allowed to re-register every 2 months, or every 2 years they'll be able to get work permits. I mean, how is this playing with people who are on the other end of that Twitter feed? I mean, the people other than me and you who are doing it as a journalistic exercise.
I think that for most of his base, they've been willing to give him the benefit of the doubt as he's kind of getting into office and kind of getting his footing. I think as we go forward, these issues of DACA, building the wall, those are some critical things that he promised and that his base will expect from him. So when it looks like he's kind of going back on some of those pledges, I think that does become an issue, probably not right now. I think right now his base is holding so far. They believe in him. The economy is doing pretty well. I think right now he's fine with his base, but as time goes on, they're going to expect him to deliver. And DACA was a big thing that they wanted to get rid of, but he can point to other things. I mean, illegal crossings of the border are down, and so he can point to that. They are definitely doing more to target people who were up for deportation. Some that the Obama administration had kind of shelved those cases, they're bringing them back. So they're working to get people out of the country. So they can say that. So he has some things kind of in his pocket that he can say, yes, I'm doing that. And then like on the Cuba stuff today, where him rolling back some of those things that the president allowed, he's keeping some of those promises. So he can point to those things.
2 points. Real quick. The first one is, it is axiomatic in American politics that Democrats run on the left and Republicans run on the right, and they govern in the middle. They kind of slide over because pragmatism requires them to. So that's the one thing that's going for them.
And DACA represents the middle ground?
Yeah. Well, DACA in a way does represent the middle ground. The other one is, Republicans may be disillusioned with Donald Trump over some of the things that he's doing, but they have no place else to go. They really don't.
Yeah, not at least until 2020. Let's go to the phones. 410-662-8780 is our number, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Frank in Aberdeen, welcome to Midday with Aisha Rasko and Alan Walden.
Good afternoon. I just want to comment about the Senate intelligence hearings. I had high hope and confidence in them up until the Sessions hearing, and especially the senators from Oklahoma and Arkansas gave him softball questions about spy novels and other trivial things. And the thing that upset me the most, in a way, was Burr gave a long-winded, basically, a scenario and then asked for Sessions to agree with it. It was like a no-brainer. Like, you know, he made a statement. He said, oh, and you agree with this. And it looks like there's a breakdown in bipartisanship in that committee.
Ayesha Rascoe, a lot of folks saw Mr. Sessions' performance in his two-plus-hour hearing with the Senate Intel Committee. Frank, you know, references Senator Burr, who's the Republican chair, and Senator Cotton from Arkansas. I believe it's Senator Wyden from Oklahoma. That Sessions was basically doing a job interview. Rumors had been flying around that his days were numbered in the Trump administration, and he was there to buck up the boss. Do you think a lot of folks are seeing it that way?
Well, I mean, there were definitely questions going up into that hearing about, because the White House had delayed saying that the president had confidence in him, which was odd. And then there were all those reports that that Sessions and President Trump weren't getting along because President Trump wasn't happy that he recused himself. I think after the hearing, I mean, Sessions staunchly defended himself. He pushed back very hard against the idea that he had done anything improper. And he also refused to answer a lot of questions, not saying that the president had invoked privilege, but kind of doing this thing just going based on precedent or going based on tradition that he wouldn't talk about these private conversations. So I think that some people who wanted him to be pressed further and wanted to hear in an open session really kind of some of these things that are going on between the White House and the Justice Department would definitely came away disappointed because he did refuse to answer those questions. The White House was probably pleased with his performance.
It's a scavenger hunt. I'm not going to call it a witch hunt. I'm going to call it a scavenger
hunt. A witch hunt is the president's characterization repeatedly.
But I call it a scavenger hunt. And I think the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee have to be very careful in how they question anybody rather than be accused of going on a scavenger hunt, of going too far afield, of trying to spread this out into areas where it simply does not belong. We're not even sure it's in the areas where it belongs right now.
Do you
all
think that the investigation should be stopped?
Say again?
Do you think is it your advice that the investigation should be stopped, that there's no there and we should just call the whole thing off?
Thank you. Use the phrase I was going to use. Is there a there? And if they can't come up with one quickly, really quickly, why are we doing this? Simply to bring Donald Trump down?
But why is quickness such an important parameter of this?
Because
shouldn't they take the time to get the facts out to see if in fact there's anything there?
Because we have to get on with the business of the United States of America. And what we're doing now is suffering from creeping paralysis. We're not paralyzed yet, but we could very easily become paralyzed if we keep polarizing this to the degree it's being polarized, especially fueled by the comments that are being made from the outside.
Yeah, and Ayesha, we were certainly polarized during the Nixon affair and Watergate. We were polarized during the Clinton impeachment hearings. We are certainly polarized here now. When Comey testified, the president came right and said, voila, I'm vindicated, because he said that there was no investigation about obstruction of justice. And then it seems minutes later, there's information that says, in fact, there is an investigation about obstruction of justice. He's not talking about vindication anymore. What is the White House tack, if I may, moving forward? Where do you think they're going to go with this?
Well,
this is for Ayesha, Alan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I beg your pardon.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. Well, thanks. I think that the White House is saying that they're focused on their agenda, that's what they're going to try to focus on going forward. Clearly, the president is focused on these probes. I think that what has maybe led to more of the paralysis, these investigations, usually they take time. You mentioned the investigations during the Clinton administration. I mean, that Whitewater investigation that ended up, catching up President Clinton over Monica Lewinsky. I mean, that started out as a real looking into real estate dealings. So these investigations do typically kind of spread. I think Comey said, you know, you start turning over rocks, you might find some things. So I think, I mean, they at this point, they have to know that this is going to take time. It doesn't seem like the president has the patience for it. I think an argument could be made that if the president stopped talking about the investigations and really just kind of focused on getting health care done, getting tax reform done, that some of this attention and pressure that he's feeling could come off a bit, because he could go to his base and say, don't think about that Russia investigation. Look at what I'm doing for you. And that may be something that would work. And that does seem like that's what his the White House wants to do and White House staff wants to do. The president doesn't really seem to be cooperating with that.
What do you think, Alan? Is this all self-induced?
My biggest problem with Donald Trump is he won't take yes for an answer. Meaning, you got the job. You ran for president of the United States. You were elected president of the United States. Take yes for an answer and do your job. Let the rest of this let the rest of this play out as it will.
And so do you think Aisha's point is well taken, which is if the president himself would take the focus off of the Russian investigation and the collusion allegations, et cetera, that everybody else would too? I mean, Mr. Mueller's certainly going to be pretty quiet.
I think it's entirely possible that could happen. If he gave us 2 days of silence, no tweets, no comments, let it play out and watch it die a morning.
The 48-hour rule. What do you think, Aisha?
That's my new 48-hour rule.
I think, you know, look, there's still going to be negative stories. I mean, this is an investigation. It's serious. It's not like there wouldn't be any negative stories coming out about the investigation. But I think that when the president talks about it, it just takes it to a whole nother level. You take what's maybe a 5 or a 6 and you put it to level 10. When the president talks about it, he just shines the biggest spotlight that can be put on it. So that I think that's the thing, is that, yes, they're going to have to hunker down. They're going to be negative stories. But when the president goes on kind of these Twitter, people call them rants, it just drives the narrative even more.
Well, we appreciate your reporting, Aisha, and we appreciate your taking the time today. As a matter of fact, I understand that today is a vacation day for you. And you were
yeah, supposed to be.
Well, God bless times two. I appreciate that. Hey, you're coming in and talking a little shop on your day off. And Alan Walden, our prayers go to you and your family and your wife, Jeannie, as she goes through her surgical procedure this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And thank you for your time today. Aisha Rasko is a White House correspondent for Reuters. Alan Walden was a Republican candidate for mayor in last year's election that was won by our current mayor, Catherine Pugh. Coming up after a break, we're kicking it old school. I mean, really, really, really old school, like 12th century old school, 13th century old school. The Peabody Consort will play and sing for us right here in Studio A. That's after a short break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.